Welcome to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols, alongside seven-time champion Robert Horry. That's just always so fun to say. Former NBA coach David Fizdale is going to join us shortly. And also coming up, guys, Blazers star CJ McCollum stops by to talk about his timetable to return after fracturing his left foot. He'll also tell us how far he thinks Portland can go in the playoffs. First, though, so the Utah Jazz absolutely clocked the Lakers last night, at one point leading by as much as 29, and it honestly wasn't even that close. Afterward, there was a rush of people proclaiming that the game didn't mean much. LeBron James said, quote, "This won't define who we will be for the rest of the season and for the long haul." And he is right. The Lakers are missing two of their five starters during a rough section of the schedule. And on the Utah side, well, even Donovan Mitchell has been reminding people that being good in February does not guarantee being good in June. Yes, the Jazz have won 22 of their last 24, but they also had a stretch of winning 21 of 23 back in 2018, and they still got their butts handed to them in the second round of the playoffs that year. And all of that is smart and reasonable analysis. But here is what is also true. If you have not climbed aboard the rolling, rollicking freight train that is the Utah Jazz experience this season, boy, are you missing out. This team has all the bells and whistles. A young superstar who's as inspiring off the court as he is on it. A two-time, maybe soon to be three-time, Defensive Player of the Year. The NBA's leading sixth man and one of the league's most crafty coaches. Despite having already played the toughest part of their schedule, the Jazz are not just top five in the league in offense, they're top five in defense too. Which is saying something in a season where some other teams' entire defensive strategy seems to be just rolling over and playing dead. Is it working? Are they gone yet? Anyway, that is certainly not the Jazz, whose connectedness on that end of the floor is pretty dazzling. Rudy Gobert, obviously the key there. Not only does he have tremendous instincts as a defender, we don't talk enough about the fact this man has a wingspan of nearly 8 feet. Can you picture one of those giant Humvees in your mind? Yeah, Rudy Gobert's arms stretch wider than that, and not even just by a little bit. Good luck getting past him. Meanwhile, no team in the league is better at smothering an opponent at the three-point line, and no team in the league is better at brandishing the three ball either. The Jazz just set a record making 50 threes over their last two games. In fact, Utah leads the league in both threes attempted and threes made, spreading out and exhausting opponents so thoroughly they may want to start putting some cots and blankets in the visitors' locker room. So what is the steam engine that's powering this locomotive? Some of it is flat-out talent. In addition to the stars, and yeah, Shaq, Donovan Mitchell is a real one, the front office has put together a deep roster where guys like Jordan Clarkson are playing the best ball of their career, and others, like, say, Derek Favors, have bought into adjusted roles. And a lot of it is also continuity. Yes, Mike Conley recently missed 6 games with hamstring issues, but as a whole, the Jazz have remained largely healthy. They've only played 3 starting lineups all season. Compare that to the Nets and Rockets, who've each had to play 19. And that continuity actually extends even further back. We all remember last year when Gobert became the first NBA player to test positive for COVID, acting carelessly enough along the way that it caused real divisions inside the locker room. But it's what happened after that's really worth noting, that Gobert was both publicly and privately contrite, not just talking the talk, but walking the walk, that the team was then thrown in the bubble together, where they were just forced to iron things out, rebond, friendships slowly reforming over bad coffee and monster games of ping pong. Of course, they then flopped a bit in the playoffs, snarfing up a 3-1 series lead to Denver, and that performance has many around the league still a bit skeptical of whether the Jazz are true contenders now or just a really hot team built for the regular season. And it's a fair question to at least ask, and last night's game isn't going to tell you the answer. Playoff basketball is just different. We don't know yet whether a Donovan and Rudy 1-2 punch is enough to best a LeBron and AD or Kawhi and PG combo, or eventually match up against KD, Kyrie, and James Harden. That is a lot of K's there. The truth, though, is that right now, the answer to that isn't actually knowable, and it also doesn't really matter yet. Yes, eventually we will see where this freight train is headed. But for right now, what we really should be doing is enjoying the ride. So I got my guys here. Fizz, we got you back. Thank you for joining us. Robert, what can you tell us is the single biggest reason for you that the Jazz are dominating the league right now?
I think if you look at the way they play defensively is the key. They have a great shot block. A lot of teams have good shot block. They have a great shot block. And when you have that type of guy behind you, you can get up on guys, run them off that three-point line, and funnel them to Gobert. Think about it. You got Gobert. You just mentioned how long he is. He's going to block everything that comes in there. And that scares people. So now they're taking bad shots. They're forcing up threes. They're doing things out of their nature they didn't want to do. So it's all about pressing up. It reminds me of all the great teams I played on. You got Tim Duncan behind you. You got Shaq. You got Dream. When you have great shot blockers, big men who can clog the paint, you got that freedom to play on that free on that three-point line, run them off, say, go ahead. Go in there and get your shot blocked, yep. And then we're going to start a break.
Love that. Coach Fizz, if you were preparing a team to face Utah, what would you most worry about them right now offensively and defensively?
Well, the thing, you know, I think that really makes them unique, to take Robert's, statement a step further, is defensively and offensively, they got an incredible amount of trust. And what I mean by that is, yes, you got a great shot blocker back there. You got a guy that can run people off and block shots and let you play the three-point line. But you got to have trust if you're Rudy Gobert that your backside is going to protect you when you go chasing shots. And they have that trust on both offense and defense. Offensively, they are built where it doesn't matter who has the ball, someone is going to have the capabilities to make a play. It's not built around a star. And so every night you see their stat line, different guys are taking advantage of the situations every night. You know Donovan Mitchell's the man. You know he can play, but ultimately everyone gets to contribute in this system, and it's beautiful to watch because it's all based on team.
Yes, you know, Snyder has made a good coaching adjustment. He's going to Clarkson and say, hey, yo, Clarkson, you got talent. Go out and do your thing. We're going to get you your shots. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the biggest key. Clarkson is getting his shots. But if you watch him in the game last night, he had a shot. He passed it up and gave it to another guy with a better shot. The old Clarkson would have forced that up. And that's contagious. The whole team are giving up shots easily for guys to get easier shots. And when you're playing basketball like that, it's flat out beautiful.
Yeah, they're getting the most out of everyone. That's a tribute to the coaching staff, but also, of course, to the players themselves. You mentioned Jordan Clarkson's growth and maturity. I mentioned Derek Favors a few minutes ago. Here's a guy who had a bigger role when he was with the Jazz last time, came back, and is now accepting a different role. And you guys always talk about being a star in your role. Every single guy on that team is contributing something important and feels like they're contributing something important. And that does matter as you get toward the playoffs. So, again, I agree with everyone who said last night didn't tell us much. That's because we already knew the Utah Jazz were really, 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 really good. All right, I want to get to today's difference maker, brought to you by CarMax. Take a look. CJ McCollum, not only one of the best guards in the NBA, he's also one of the most vocal advocates for the advancement of social justice in the league. Now, recently, CJ has focused his efforts to help end voter suppression. CJ, welcome back to The Jump. I want to hear a little bit more about that before we get started with basketball stuff. What have you been working on lately?
I'm working on a lot of different things. I think, obviously, education has always been a main focal point on things that I've wanted to accomplish in terms of educating the youth and kind of uplifting those who don't necessarily have a voice, and being able to join the social change fund. We've been working on a lot of different things in terms of supporting our neighborhoods and figuring out ways to not only educate them about things like vaccinations, like the importance of voting, like some of the things that are happening to our brothers and sisters out here in terms of unfair trials, unfair stops and things of that nature with police and law enforcement, but also trying to kind of bridge that gap and bring people together so that we better understand how to coexist with people of authority. Yeah. Those are a lot of things we've been working on while also trying to provide resources to our schools and to our communities.
I mean, we just had an election where the national discussion got so much attention, but it really is on the local level where most people's lives are affected, right? What they know, how they're able to interact with their local government officials, with the police. It's just so important. And the more knowledge you have, the more power, right?
Absolutely. And I think that's what we're trying to get across to our kids and our brothers and sisters in our communities, is that we have to educate each other on what's available to us from a usage standpoint, but also how to maneuver and how to kind of behave in a way in which, you know, that kind of puts us in a position to be successful down the road.
And look, I do want to talk about your time on the court. It's a little hard for me, CJ, because you're out injured, and I think a lot of people around the NBA are very sad. You had such a hot start to the season. I don't know if you're aware, when you got knocked out, you were second in the NBA in real plus minus. LeBron was the only one ahead of you. It was just such a sort of cruel moment for Blazers fans to have that be when you got hurt. You're rehabbing now, fractured left foot. When can we expect to see you back on the floor? And I will say, when I said earlier today that you were going to be on the show, I had a bunch of Blazers fans tweeting me saying, can he be back by Friday? Because we're playing the Lakers.
Yeah, I'm feeling much better. I'm progressing. I'll be at 6 weeks on Saturday. Continue to try to load the foot and strengthen it. I think that's what's been our main focus, trap bar, squats, lunges, stability stuff, getting more contact in on the foot and seeing how it responds. But I will not be back on Friday, unfortunately, due to circumstances. I won't be able to return that soon. But I'm looking forward to seeing how I feel at 6 weeks and then kind of progressing from there. And you know, I want to be cautious with my approach with this injury, with this being my third foot fracture. And with the young guys playing so well, this gives them the opportunity to kind of continue to grow. And they've taken advantage of their opportunities and their time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's not a ton of pressure on you to rush back. It's more pressure building that you'd be great by the playoffs because this team is looking dangerous again. And you have been part of that, at least at the start. You were taking nearly four more three-pointers per game this season than you did last season. What went into that surge?
I think it was a combination of how I trained in the summertime, being able to get extra conditioning in, being able to figure out, you know, how to be more efficient in games. I take a lot of mid-range shots. I'm a pretty good mid-range shooter. I can get the spots on the floor, but also figuring out what was going to be best for our team long-term, what was going to be best for me long-term, and how do I open up the defense. And I credit, you know, our staff, I credit John Yim, I credit Todd, I credit my PTs. Just being able to train in a way in which it translates to games was important for us. And shooting more threes was something that John wanted me to do, something that Coach Terry organization wanted me to do. And I had to train for it first before it could translate.
I mean, look, between you and Dame, we're not even going to be able to call them logo shots anymore. You guys are going to move to behind the midline of the court. You guys are going to start shooting from the three-quarter mark. It's getting dangerous up there in Portland. And it's not just you guys, right? Fifth place in the West for this team. Nurk's out. You're out. Dame's doing great. But as you mentioned, it is a deep group behind him that is contributing. How confident are you that this year's team will be able to outperform last year's team?
I'm very confident. I think it just comes down to health in the playoffs. Being hurt during the regular season allows players to grow. It allows them to develop, get meaningful minutes, and to get comfortable. And as we come back and kind of get together as a full roster, I think it's only a matter of time before we begin to mesh, go on a run, and transition into the playoffs. But I definitely think we'll fare better due to experience, due to our bench having more depth, and also due to us, you know, having some time to recover and rehab during the regular season to where we should be fresh for the playoffs.
Now, I don't know exactly what you got into yesterday. Rehab, I'm sure, spending some time with your lovely new wife. But apparently you made someone $18,000 also yesterday, CJ. Did you know that a dunk of yours from 2019 sold on NBA Top Shot last night for $18,000? And I don't want to cast any aspersions here. I don't think that's the best dunk I've ever seen you make. $18,000.
Yeah, that dunk isn't my best work, that's for sure, man. I think that's cool. People are able to kind of capture those moments. Kudos to whoever got $18,000 for that. That's a nice come up. I'm happy for you. I'll have to get some more dunks at some point so that the highlights look a little bit better for Top Shot.
I saw you on Twitter asking about NBA Top Shot recently. How much has this sort of gotten into players' consciousness that this is going on? Because the collectibles market, you know, it ebbs and flows, but this has become really hot.
Yeah, a lot of players are inquiring about it, trying to learn and educate themselves about it. I think I've grown closer to the fungible tokens and what they consist of, and trying to figure out what moments I should buy. Looking at rookie, looking at LaMelo Ball's first assist, looking at Zion's first dunk, like trying to pick certain things that make sense for me. But I'm trying to also get some free packs. So if NBA Top Shot is listening, you know, I'd love to have some of my own moments. And I would also love to be able to create some moments with you guys so where my dunks are a little bit better.
There we go. That man wants some non-fungible tokens. Get him some. There you go. CJ, thank you so much for stopping by. The league misses you. Best of luck with your recovery. But thank you so much for everything you're doing off the court. It matters to all of us.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, and coming up, we will discuss the biggest buyers and sellers in the league heading into the trade deadline. It is exactly 1 month from today, so stick around for that. Welcome back now to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols, still here with Coach David Fizdale, Robert Ori, and we are now joined by our senior writer, host of The Low Post, Mr. Zach Lowe. And I want to start, guys, with the Lakers. We talked about the Jazz at the top of the show, but let's talk L.A. now because that game set them now on a four-game losing streak. Zach, you cover, I mean, Zach, we're going to get to you first here since you're joining us. You said yesterday, I heard you on a podcast saying, hey, I'm not concerned. Why are you not concerned?
Well, I'm a little more concerned after it looked so bad last night. But really, look, I hate to be the boring guy in the media, but Anthony Davis is injured and Dennis Schroeder is out for health and safety protocols. He's really their only other ball handler who can take some of the pressure off LeBron. It's kind of like, wake me up until those guys get back. Now, I'll be concerned if we start hearing things like Anthony Davis's injury is lingering or it's more serious than we thought. But these guys don't care about playoff seeding. They don't care much about home court. They just need to get to the playoffs intact. Yes, would it be nice if they were playing better? If Wes Matthews would hit more shots and some of these role players would step up? Sure. But this team is about LeBron and AD, and I can't read too much into anything that happens when AD is not playing.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think when you put together the injuries on top of the fact that All-Star's coming, LeBron's not excited about going to play All-Star. So that's probably weighing into it a little bit. But you do have injuries. You have a seasoned team, a championship team on a quick turnaround who are now in the midst of the next season trying to repeat. And you're going to have lulls, especially right before All-Star game. I think this team, when they get healthy and they come back out of All-Star, they're going to come back firing on all the cylinders. And I don't think home court will be as important this year without a big crowd in the arena. So I don't think that's weighing on their minds too much.
Hmm. You know, the three guys, everybody's right about this. AD, Schroeder, out. No fans in the stands. The Lakers are the Lakers. And as long as they still got LeBron James, they're good to go. And, you know, let me just say this. You, as you watch them play and they keep losing, you saying, please don't match up with me in the playoffs. You do not want to match up with the Lakers in the playoffs. So if they keep losing, you say, okay, I don't want to be in a position to play them again. So nobody's the Lakers aren't worried because it's the playoffs. They're going to step it up. They're going to be healthy. And who knows what's going to happen when the trade deadline comes into play. Because if they get another big man, watch out.
Well, we're going to talk about that a little more in the next segment. But, Rob, we were talking a little bit before the show started, and you watch this team more closely than anyone else on our air because you also get paid to watch them from Spectrum here in L.A., and you sit there every night in the studio and discuss them for a half hour after every game. So can you tell the people out there a little bit of what you were telling me about Dennis Schroeder and just all the ways that him being missing has hurt this team in the last 2 weeks or week?
Yeah. Dennis the Menace is one of those guys that doesn't get talked about enough. He is an incredible ball handler. He takes a lot of pressure off LeBron. He's one of those guys that's crafty around the rim. You look at what Rondo did for the Lakers last season in the championship. That's what Dennis Schroeder does him in 2.0 version. He can get to the rack. He can shoot jumpers. He can hit threes a little bit better. But the most important thing, and what the Lakers miss him the most, is when he picks up other players in the backcourt. Mm. That wears the other team down defensively and offensively. So he's turning guys. He's doing things. He's been that menace that they like him to be. And people, you know, somebody like Zach doesn't appreciate things like that. When guys doesn't show up in the stats, they play defense like that to get a ball up and do things like that. So Dennis the Menace is being missed just as much as AD.
Zach, I was going to move on to the Celtics, but please respond if you care to.
I'm not going to respond to this big shot, Rob. It's all these big shots. He thinks he can take shots of me. I'm not even going to dignify it. I will say the one thing that's different, though, for the Lakers this year is the competition. The Clippers, I think, are at least more cohesive. The Jazz are for real. The path out of the West is going to be harder. So it is one thing that's different. Like, they're going to need to play at a really high level the entire playoffs. So there is one difference. I would like to see them get clicking, but they got plenty of time.
All right, let's move on, in fact, to the Celtics. Their struggles continued last night. Trae Young, 33 points. Danilo Gallinari dropped 38 off the bench. The Celtics lost their third straight game. They dipped to two games below 500. Now, in a local radio interview with 98.5 The Sports Hub today, Danny Ainge said, quote, "I wish I had answers for you. I don't." So, Fizz, do you have any answers on what is wrong with the Celtics at the moment?
Well, I think it's a few things happening. One, you just got to give the Eastern Conference credit. It's a better conference now. You got the Hornets playing great basketball. You got the Hawks. You got the Knicks. All of these teams are getting better. I'm sure it's another young team I'm leaving out right now. But those teams are better. Now you look at their roster. No Gordon Hayward. And now Marcus Smart is out, and now they have to play a lot of small guys. And so what you're seeing is parts of the game where their defense isn't clicking for them, or offensively they may not be drawing fouls or getting the shots that they necessarily want. But I wouldn't be worried about these guys. They've been through a lot. The two All-Stars are rising to the occasion, and you're going to see better basketball as the season moves forward.
Man, I never, ever thought I would agree with Danny Ainge right now. It's like you don't know what's going on with the Celtics team. They got two young stars, two all-stars is playing again. You got Tristan Thompson is rebounding his butt off for them. And you look around and he says, what is the problem? Other than Marcus Smart being injured, who is the engine of that team, you're trying to figure out why are they losing? And I have to agree with Fizz. The East is a lot better. East is so good now from all the young teams. And these young teams are those type of teams that don't care about anything but getting buckets, playing basketball, and having fun.
The East only has three teams that are over 500 now. Just three. Yes, the bottom of the East might be better. But, Zach, help me out here. Just three teams over 500. I cannot buy that the East is such a juggernaut that the Celtics can't compete. Doesn't this have to do, Zach, with their depth also?
Well, if the East is so good, how about the East owners vote for 1 to 16 playoff seeding so we just get the top 16 teams in? How about that, juggernaut Eastern Conference? Look, the Celtics, Gordon Hayward left for nothing. Mr. Trade Exception has not played any games for the Celtics this year. Trade Exception is not a real human being. Marcus Smart's injured, and that has left the Celtics playing too many guys around Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown who are really either kind of standstill shooters or just grunt guy rebounders like Tristan Thompson and Daniel Tice. And the result has been this offense is just stuck in mud. You can tell that Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are trying to figure out, do we have to do everything? Am I really going to make this kickout pass? There's just so much one-on-one play. And when you get into a stretch like that, and I think they've played something like 14 games in 24 days or something. They've played a ton of games. They're probably tired. It just looks bad. I think no team needs the All-Star break more than Boston. They're better than this, but it'll be interesting to see how good they can get when Smart comes back and Kemba Walker is finally finding his game again. But they certainly don't feel like a team right now who's going to punch into that Brooklyn, Philly, Milwaukee conversation yet.
And look, I do get what you guys are saying in the larger sense. If the teams at the bottom of the East are better, that just means that they can't beat up on those weaker teams anymore. So I get it. I'm just
saying. Can't have an off night.
Cannot have an off night in the same way. Now, Celtics governor and CEO Wick Grosbeck said, he told NBC Sports Boston, quote, "We had hoped Kyrie would stay forever and lead us all the way. That change touched off a lot of stuff because he left, a bit of a domino effect." Fizz, do you buy that Kyrie leaving had such a big domino effect on the Celtics that they're still feeling the repercussions of that a couple seasons later?
Well, I mean, it always is a ripple effect that doesn't really stop, but ultimately you're not feeling it no more. You're moved on. I mean, you got two All-Stars on your team, for crying out loud, and two former All-Stars. So, no, I'm not buying that per se, but I guarantee you if they were really banking on having Kyrie, that definitely started a ripple effect that they didn't plan on. But ultimately, come on, enough time has passed. You can't keep talking about that stuff.
No, I'm not buying it at all. Kyrie moved on. He didn't play that much when he was there anyway, so it's not a ripple effect. So I'm not buying it at all.
No. You know what else, too, Rachel?
I don't really see why this is so...
Go ahead, Zach. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I don't know why this is that controversial. Like Kemba's not playing very well. Kyrie's playing out of his mind. I think implied by this is the Celtics' plan A way back when was Kyrie is going to be the draw that helps us trade for Anthony Davis and gets Anthony Davis to stay. And that plan all blew up in their faces. So I think there is some truth to this. I also think it's kind of like, duh, why mention it?
Well, also, right. This team has made two of the last three Eastern Conference finals. So yes. I'm not sure I would look at Kyrie leaving. I can't even keep track of days on the calendar. A year and a half ago, 2 years ago, the last year has been 10 years. Anyway, I wouldn't necessarily point to that. I think there's some other roster issues they have got to get going with. All right, Robert and Coach Fizz are taking a segment off. They will be back later in the show, though, so don't go too far, gentlemen. Coming up, we are going to get a bunch of our insiders together because it is officially 1 month from the NBA trade deadline. So who are the buyers and sellers? Who should we expect to hit the buyout market? Zach Lowe, Ramona Shelburne, Mark Spears will tell us next. First, though, here's what the Jump recommends for today. ESPN's own Mark Jackson joined Rich Kleiman on the Boardroom's Out of Office podcast. They discussed Mark's playing career, his run as Warriors head coach, and much more. Check that out. All right, people, we are exactly one month away from the NBA trade deadline. That's at 3 p.m. Eastern on March 25th. We'll have a trade deadline special that day on the Jump, just saying. And to help us prepare for all the craziness we are expecting over the next month, we welcome in some of our insiders, Mark Spears, Ramona Shelburne, joining Zach Lowe and myself. So, Mark, who do you think the biggest sellers are going to be when we get to 1 month from today?
Well, I've been talking to some NBA GMs and other executives, longtime scouts, and they said keep an eye on the Southwest Division. So let's start in Dallas. No matter what you're hearing, they say keep an eye on Kristaps Porzingis. He is somebody that Dallas is shopping because of salary, injuries, and as one scout said, high maintenance issues. Perhaps it's a little difficult to trade him. Also keep an eye on the Houston Rockets. P.J. Tucker and Victor Oladipo, who will be a free agent this summer. You know, another name is San Antonio that's kind of surprising as you. LaMarcus Aldridge's name's been bandied about. Also, a little bit I'm hearing DeMar DeRozan. And then down in the Bayou in New Orleans, I'm also hearing J.J. Redick as well.
Well, Rach, you know, I think that that was very interesting, Mark. I'm going to go with Cleveland. I think Andre Drummond is probably one of the more impact players, but it's really hard to move that much money. And so they have two centers that people are going to want, JaVale McGee and Andre Drummond. And I think it'll probably be easier for them to move JaVale, but what do they get for him? And so I think if they can move that Andre Drummond contract, there's a couple of contenders that would like to have him.
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing about this season is the play-in tournament has kept almost everybody alive. So it's not clear to me who is going to be sellers. And the teams that are going to be sellers, do they have anything that is appealing to the teams that are buyers and that is easy to trade for? I look at the Bulls, for instance. Thaddeus Young and Garrett Temple in normal years would be just like central casting win-now trade guys. But the Bulls are right in the thick of the playoff race in the Eastern Conference. But for obvious sellers, you got to look at Oklahoma City with Al Horford and George Hill. You know, the record shows that they will trade stuff for draft picks. And then Mark mentioned if there's one big-ish name that I'm looking for that could maybe tip the balance somewhere, it's Victor Oladipo. I'm not saying he's available. I'm not saying the Rockets have made him available. That they're taking calls. I just think logically that's a guy to keep your eye on. Do they want him long term, or are they going to start exploring what they may be able to get for him? That's a name I'm looking at.
Well, it is interesting, Zach, your point that so many more teams are, quote, in it now, right? Teams that at least feel like they're in it in that play-in zone. And those are teams sometimes that have had a fan base go a very long time since they've had a playoff berth or things to be happy about. So they're not eager to pull the trigger and sell the way they would have been in previous years. It really changes the landscape. It also means that if there are a couple guys available, whether it is end up being Victor Oladipo, and we don't know yet, Andre Drummond, obviously, Ramona, as you pointed out, could tip the scales for a contender somewhere. So it's going to be interesting. Who do you think are the biggest buyers, Zach? Who's looking for to buy, pick up these guys the most?
I think you got to start with the teams that are underperforming expectations. So Boston would be one. They're going to look around. They always look around. Denver is 17-14. I think their conference finals berth last year was a signal. We're ready. We're ready now. We can't wait much longer, so I'd keep an eye on them. And then your teams at the top that are always kind of searching around. Philly will look. The Clippers will look. But these teams, I mean, the flip side of it is all these good teams have traded all their draft picks. They don't have anything left to trade. So the Clippers are going to have to trade guys out of their current rotation to get people. So, but it's going to be sort of the usual suspects in that regard, I think.
I'm hearing that the Clippers are still looking for a point guard, a veteran point guard. You know, George Hill's name is interesting there, as Zach mentioned. Keep an eye on the Nets. They've been wanting a center. They need a center. When they lost Jared Allen, they lost a lot of rebounding and shot blocking. And so they're probably looking at Drummond as well as JaVale McGee. Drummond, you know, he's not a guy that's going to be easy to get. So maybe JaVale McGee probably is an easier route. And the Nets are also shopping Spencer Dinwiddie as well, who, despite his injury, he could be a valuable piece for a team in the future.
You know, it was interesting. Mark brought up Dallas as a potential seller. I'm curious to see what they do, if they want to buy something or if they want to do something. They're obviously underachieving, but they don't have any incentive to tank, right? They have to send their draft pick to New York.
Right.
So what do you do with that? And I think, you know, the teams out here in LA, as you mentioned, Zach, they don't have anything much to trade, but if the Lakers want to upgrade at that five spot, and they face competition for a couple of the centers that might be available, if you don't want to wait and see who is available on the buyout market, then you could get creative. Maybe they have a couple of young players that people like, Talen Horton Tucker, Alex Caruso. I know Laker fans will freak out if I even say those names because everybody loves them. But you know, I think the LA teams probably end up just getting the guys in the buyout market, because the Lakers had a pretty good success last year doing that with Markieff Morris.
Well, it is interesting, right? And we're showing on the full screen up there, you can see the trade restrictions because of the step-in rule.
Yep.
Team can't trade all of these first-round picks if they've already traded other first-round picks, right? You're required to keep some of them so your team does not go completely down the toilet if you mismanage your assets. So that, again, leads us to the buyout market. Zach, do you think that because so many of these key contender teams have so many trade restrictions, the buyout market is going to be even more competitive than usual this year?
I mean, it usually comes down to the top teams anyway, right? And buyout guys, for all the hullabaloo we make of them, they really rarely, rather, end up impacting the championship race. But yeah, all those teams will pay attention to it. And another buyer I forgot to mention in the sort of underperforming expectations department, you always have to watch Miami. Now, again, they've got a pick out the door, too, a couple picks out the door, but they have some trade flexibility. They're two games under. They've got Jimmy back now, and they're starting to pick up. Goran Dragic came back last night. They're starting to pick up, but always watch Miami.
Well, Andre Drummond, you know, he's a buyout guy, but he loses his bird rights if you do that with him, so that's not attractive to him.
Mm-hmm.
But Brooklyn, Miami, and Toronto have interest. Another kind of maybe not so big names to keep an eye on, Kings might buy out a couple guys, Hassan Whiteside and Nemanja Bjelica, probably messed up his name, and I'm keeping an eye on George Hill as well.
Well, you know, I'll go with Trevor Ariza. I mean, he's a veteran that you've heard mentioned in several acquisitions over the past couple of years. How many trades have we had last summer? We haven't seen him in Oklahoma City, but his former agent works for the Lakers right now, so always file that one away.
Thank you guys so much for a little primer there. 1 month to the trade deadline, and as I mentioned, you'll see all these faces again because The Jump is going to have a two-hour trade deadline special presented by Kia, 2 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Put it in your calendar now. I've already asked producer Hillary for the crank. I'm just warning everybody.
Oh, no.
I've asked for it. We'll see if it's COVID approved. We'll find out. Coming up, guys, with KD nursing a hamstring injury, should he play in the All-Star game? We will discuss. Welcome back now to The Jump. Take a look at what Kyrie Irving posted on Instagram yesterday. It's a modified NBA logo with Kobe Bryant at the center with the caption, "Gotta happen. I don't care what anyone says. Black Kings built the league." Now, Vanessa Bryant shared Irving's post on her Instagram story with her own caption saying, "Love this, Kyrie Irving." Well, we're going to add one more voice to the debate here. Here is what the current NBA logo, Jerry West, said right here on The Jump when we asked him about being the logo back in 2017. Take a listen.
You know, first of all, I wish that had never gotten out that logo. I do.
Really? Why? It's the best nickname ever,
really
by
do.
The way.
And I've said it more than once. And, you know, it's flattering if that's me. And I know it is me.
Yes.
But it is flattering. It's also, I think, if I were the NBA, I would be embarrassed about it. I really would.
Why?
Because I don't know. I just say, I don't like to do anything to call attention to myself. When people say that, that's just not who I am, period.
Wow.
And if they would want to change it, I wish they would. In many ways, I wish they would.
Very interesting to hear that, Robert, as Kobe's former teammate and someone who worked with Jerry West. What do you think of this idea?
I love that idea. There are a couple of iconic silhouettes out there, but, you know, Kobe Bryant is one of the most fantastic players to ever play this game. I'm good with it. My only thing is I want the Kobe with the fro. That's the one I want.
I love it. I love it because it's Jerry West who's passing it over, because he's the guy that brought Kobe into Lakerland and really got to be a mentor to him and a father figure to him in a lot of ways. So if it's going to be a person, I would be great with it, with Kobe Bryant being that guy.
Now, a lot of people brought up, of course, Michael Jordan, but as our producers noted, his logo is already plastered all over the NBA, just in a different way. Let's check out who is in the zone, brought to you by AutoZone. Before we go, the Brooklyn Nets red hot, having won 7 straight games, despite KD missing 5 straight with that strained hamstring. Steve Nash said earlier this week he expects KD back before the All-Star break, but Coach Fizz, we know KD is an All-Star captain. Should he actually play in the game, though?
KD wouldn't make it to the All-Star game if I'm coach. We locking him up like Doc Rivers and those guys did DeAndre Jordan for free agency. He's not getting out of the house. There's no chance.
Not no, but hell no. I do Dikembe on that. Dikembe, no, 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 no.
KD, listen to your elder, Robert Horry here. Thank you, Coach Fizz. Thank you, all my guests today. We'll be back tomorrow.